Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Punch Kick Choke Chat. This is one of my favorite nights we have on this show. It is the host's night. It's Thursday at 8:30 p.m. here in Toronto. My name is Sean Benson. I'm one of your hosts of PKCC, Punch Kick Choke Chat. And yeah, it's just a delight because we get to have your questions. And the thing we do tonight is we're going to spotlight you. I'll get more specific about that, but it's a real interactive night. And then out of the gate, I just want to let you know that we're doing an experiment tonight. We are live streaming to YouTube for the first time. So if you were watching on YouTube, this is just happening. And it's a platform that we're starting to play with. So we got the Zoom recording and then we're out on the YouTube, not live, but right now you could be watching this as it's happening. So we're super excited about that. Every week it falls to me to introduce Sensei Nicholas Suino. He is an eighth Dan in Iaido. He's a sixth Dan in Judo, a sixth Dan in Japanese Jiu-Jitsu. And I was texting with him a little bit this week, and this is something we touched upon, but I'm watching Manhunt, the Unabomb series, and it absolutely blew my mind. We touched upon it when he was our first ever guest on PKCC, that had that particular envelope been better constructed by Ted Kaczynski, none of this would be happening. And I don't think I realized the magnitude of that until I watched the show. And it just really clearly demonstrated, you know, this was not the documentary one, but the fiction one based on truth. And I just want to say, Sensei Suino, holy shit. Talk about that as much or as zero as you want right now. But I'm just so glad that he fucked up on that one. And that's not to disrespect any family that lost a member, because it's a brutal, brutal thing, but I can't believe you opened that and lived to tell the tale.
Isn't it crazy? I mean,
yeah.
You know, talk about being cast into something that the whole world knows about, yep, with no intentionality. You know, I was not the intended victim. You know, just happened to be at the right place at the wrong time, or vice versa. I'm not sure which. And, you know, forever thereafter, it's created this bizarre form of celebrity. Through no doing of my own, right? I can go anywhere, and if it comes up in conversation, people are fascinated by it. But I've got a lot of great friends. It's got a cool history in a way. I don't know if I mentioned this last time. Did I mention that I have $1 million judgment against the Unabomber?
No.
It's worth the paper it's printed on.
Right.
Yeah. Right. We went to court and filed for a, I've actually think I've let it lapse. Like, you have to renew it every 10 years. And knowing that I wasn't going to get my $1 million, I let it, but I have a nice piece of paper that I could frame if I wanted to put it up on the wall.
Well, and can you go up and like take a tree from where his cabin was or something? Like,
well, there was a huge controversy about the stuff that he did have. A lot of people wanted to sell it to try to raise money or whatever.
Right.
And then some of the victims didn't want to, because they felt it was adding to his
notoriety,
which is all cool. You know, I like money, but I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Yep.
And, yeah, I don't know. I think if it was up to me and Randy, we'd go out to Colorado and we'd take a pound of flesh. but honestly,
can
at this
I offer
point,
you my Malbot sword? Yeah, it's actually quite sharp.
Yeah. So, but you know, honestly, it's so far removed. It's a great story. It keeps coming up, and you know, I've been interviewed by, you know, countless times, and I'm glad you enjoyed the Netflix show. And I think I mentioned also that there's an Audible documentary book coming out about that as well. Yeah. Pretty cool.
I really enjoyed it.
His brother never gets any credit for turning him in, but he also didn't keep any of the reward either, did he, Sensei? He gave that reward all away, didn't he?
Yeah. He figured out sort of the percentage of damage to each victim. And I don't know if he kept any of it, but I do know he gave everybody some money, and I got a little bit of money out of it, which I'm sure, you know, I wasted on something stupid.
Yeah, but you're alive to have wasted it, so.
Yes, and that continues to be true. I continue to be alive, and I continue to waste a lot of time and money.
Oh, God bless. I hear that.
Well, thanks for the introduction, Sean. Yeah. You know, we don't often get to hear a lot about you, but I'm curious if the haircut is just a whim, or is it has something to do with the role you're playing, or what's the
it's
story?
A little bit of both. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm not kidding that I just kind of want to be part of the crew. You know, I've been training, as y'all know, like as much as I've ever trained in my life, and I'm really digging into it. And I'm shooting a film that I'm directing in about a month, and the character I'm playing, I was just really meditating on what I thought the guy should look like. And I kind of went back through my files of looks I've had, and I just thought this was perfect for the sort of sensitive, worried about his age, this and that. Like, there's so many aspects of it that are the exact opposite of the, like, kind of martial arts tough guy vibe. So kind of for a role, but even when I had the bleach bond and stuff, that was always the whim of what I want that I go, oh, that would work for this role. So I sort of bank things I want to do. And then when the timing's right, I just do it. And it's a really fun way to work. And I've been lucky enough that, you know, as a guy who gets to play leading man, I also get to do all the character stuff because of those whims. So 50-50, sensei.
Yeah, when I do it, I just got to own it. It's just me. Sorry, guys. I got no excuse. I just shaved my head.
This is all I do, is I do what I want on camera. And then I go, I wasn't me. That was the character.
Yeah, right. That's perfect. It's good to have an excuse built in.
Yeah, but thanks for asking, sensei.
Yeah, cool. Punch, kick, choke, and Chad, falls to me to introduce sensei Randy Dauphin. Very high ranking in karate and iaido, multiple time world champion. Somebody I've known for many, many years, thanks to Hanchi Gary Legacy, and have trained with for many, many years. And one of the things that he and I have done together and talk about together a lot is these insane workouts. Some of them are insane on their merits, just because it's stuff that's hard to do, but you can build up and do it. But Randy, I know you were talking about, you know, now COVID has interrupted it. You were talking about a massive super workout or 100-mile marathon or something. I wanted to make sure we got to that. So somebody just sent me a link to a 26-mile marathon that a guy did with, he went 26 miles, but, you know, he flipped a tractor tire for a mile. He had a 40-pound vest on most of the time. He walked on his hands. I don't know if that was a whole mile. You know, it was sort of a CrossFit super marathon, and I watched a little documentary on it. I saw a couple things there that took me out of it completely at my advanced age, but I wondered if you were still thinking about any super workouts.
Yeah, so I still want to do what I said at Permissions, sensei. So when I turned 50, when Sensei Legacy turned 50, I remember him asking all the black belts to come to the dojo, and he fought each one of us at 50, and he beat the crap out of each one of us. everybody who was there, the 30 or 40 people who were there. So since I like to do everything like Sensei Legacy, when I turn 50, I'd really like to have a day of fighting if COVID allows for that. And if I can do that in a similar fashion, but also do a little bit of good, I'd like to do that too. So right now what I'm thinking is doing 52-minute rounds with whoever wants to come here and fight with me, with a 1-minute break in between each round. And what I'd like to do is get people to maybe pay for the rounds that they fight with me, and then take all that money and give it to, like, the charity I'm thinking about is Kiyoshi James Freeze. He was on the show. He has cystic fibrosis. If I could do a big fundraiser at 50 and I could raise an amount of money and give that to that charity that one of my best friends supports, I'd like to do something like that. And of course, I'll do something private, some crazy fitness something. I don't know. Did you see CrossFit release 21.1?
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, so I did it the other night just to... I watched Rich Froning doing it, and I thought, oh, I'm going to do this, right? So 21.1 is one wall walk, you know, where you walk up to a handstand on the wall and then down, and then 10 double unders, and then 3 and 30, and then 6 and 60, and then 9 and 90, and then 15 and 150, and then 21 and 210. So I was able to get that done in, like, it was like, I don't know, 38 minutes or something like that. And I felt pretty good because I think Froning did it in like 21 or something like that, or 20. But I know he was also half-assed. Like, he wasn't, I'm not comparing myself to Rich Froning in any way, but it's a hard workout and it was fun to do. So thanks for that. That's what I'm thinking right now. I know at one time I was thinking some other things, but we'll see what the world allows me to do when I turn 50. And for me, I get to introduce Hanchi Legacy every time we do this. And I, Hunchy and I had this conversation because the last time we did this, he said, you know, Randy, you don't have to keep mentioning that I'm a 10th in and that I'm a member of the Black Belt Hall of Fame and that I'm an author. He said, you don't have to mention that I'm a student of Harold Warden and Benny Allen and Richard Kim and Anthony Sandoval. He said, I didn't have to say any of that stuff anymore. And I said, Hanchi, it's really important that we do, because we never know who's going to jump onto just one show and learn something about us. So that's the kind of the consistency that we bring to it. And it's funny, you said, Sasrina, that you said about 50, because I was down at Hanchi's house, I think it was last Tuesday, and he said, my God, you're going to be 50? He goes, I remember when you were 18. And he said, he was looking at me saying, I wonder what he's going to be like when he was 50. And now here it is. Last week, I shared this moment. I talked about when Seth's legacy grabbed that guy by the groin. You can go back to last week's episode if you want to know what that story is. And I was thinking about that today. And I remember, Hanchi, do you remember the time the football player said that at Western, yeah, that he could tackle you? And you were like, okay, well, then go ahead and tackle me. And I remember at that time, because I'm like a Shodan, just thinking, how are you doing this stuff? Like, this guy comes running at him, and at the last second, he just slams this guy's head down and hooks his arm under his arm. And this guy literally flies, and he lands in this pile of chairs and desks, and they all come rattling down on top of him.
Nice.
It was hilarious. It was one of the funniest things. Another thing, Sensei, I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember, I think it was in Dominican Republic, when I was competing there, the way they did kata and weapons is they scored you on a piece of paper. So when you're in the ring, you have no idea. Like normally, you know, if you go to a tournament, you know if you won kata, because if you've competed enough, you've done the math. It's not a surprise to you when they call your name and first place. But in this particular tournament, you didn't know, and they didn't announce the top three until the evening show. And I had won, so they called me up and I had won in kata. And because Sensei Legacy was one of the higher ranking people, he was handing out medals and doing things up on the stage. And I won weapons and then I had won kata. And then I remember this really, it's an awesome moment. I remember being behind the curtain and saying to Sensei Legacy, we did it, Sensei. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, we did it. I'm going to get the triple crown, because I already knew I had won fighting. Right, there's no surprises there. And that was the last one to get. Do you remember that, Sensei, when we were behind the curtain and I said, we did it, we got, and I really mean that truly. Sensei Legacy, my victories are his victories. We did that together. We trained together. We did all that together. It wouldn't have happened without us working together. It was a team effort. Even though I got the stuff, it's all his stuff too. That's my introduction for Sensei Legacy tonight. What do you want to say, Sensei, tonight about any of us?
I'm the quiet guy. I'm not going to. I got some stuff I'll be talking about later once we get going.
Okay. All right. So, Sean, do you want to do your housekeeping and then we can let our special guest on for a second?
That sounds great. So, everybody, again, I mentioned this. We're streaming live on YouTube. Point people to that. Click the link and have it run on your phone while you're watching this and see how the platforms line up. You know, to be honest, it's beneficial for us that you're here. It's also beneficial for us, I believe, if you're on YouTube, it gains traffic. You know, we're not traffic hunters, but we are excited about the show and the longevity of it, and everything that helps the show helps you as our audience. So play with that tonight as you wish. We look forward to hearing your feedback. In fact, if you jump over to YouTube and go, oh, that's actually a pretty cool way to watch it, and then I'll pop in here to ask my questions. That would be a really cool way to do it. And then the other thing is,
hey, John.
Hey, Hanchi.
How are you?
Without further ado, this is our special guest with a special announcement, Hanchi Tarian. How are you doing tonight?
Hanchi, sorry, Sean, to step on you there, but before you do your announcement, Hanchi, I thought since we have you on here, I'm going to do Command Shift 4. And I'm going to do a screenshot of us. And I'm hoping everybody can look at their camera right now and give a thumbs up, because I'm going to post this and we're going to say happy birthday to Hunchy Caesar Burkowski.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Perfect. Hunchy.
Well, first of all, congratulations for the number. It's almost been a year that PKCC is alive. I've discovered it a few months ago, and it's quite the talk show. It's one of my favorite, and it's my Thursday night special. Except tonight, I have to leave early. I got an announcement to make. Something's happening in my life tomorrow, and I've got to work a few hours to get it all done, and I'll fill you in next time. But I'm here for a big announcement, a major announcement. I'm getting calls around the world from people that, as everybody in martial arts, we're feeling the blues right now. Mm. It's kind of rough, it's kind of difficult, and they're asking me, well, is there any way you could do something that would give us hope and see a light at the end of the tunnel, that this pandemic is going to go away, but more so is that we are going to come back and do some training. Well, I remembered about 25 years ago, they had the Live AIDS concert to help Africa. And one morning I woke up, and some morning I wake up, I'm intelligent. The other day I stay in bed, so that's safer for me and everybody else. But so I've decided to do a little bit of research and try to put together a World Martial Arts live event. Well, folks, it's going to be on. It's going to be on May the 15th, and it's going to be involved in 40 to 60 countries. Imagine this, 24 hours, four different instructors every hour, so that's 96 classes. So this way here, we have Asia that's going to be involved in teaching and training. And we have Australia, different time zone, India, Russia, Europe, North America. So it's going to be great, but I want to sort of release more and more news every week on PKCC as much as possible. But I want to lay out tonight, the big news is that we're going to have Hunchy, Gary Legacy, and the Legacy Shorin Ryu team that will be part of this. We're going to have Kiyoshi Dolphin also teaching. And we are going to have Sensei Suino teaching. And by the way, Sean, when you mentioned that spooked you when you were watching the Unabomber,
yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I had to rewind the tape. So I'm so glad that you're here, my friend, that you're a great addition to martial arts and to everybody's life. So I'm glad he missed, you know. So what we'll be doing is those of you that would be interested either in hosting this event for your school or for you to participate, contact PKCC. We also have the team from PKCC on the technical side, but we have teams all over the world on the technical side. This has never been done, but I can guarantee you're going to have some of the biggest name in martial arts that we know in Canada, of course, in North America, but also from Europe. And every week we're going to give you a little bit more information as we get along. Posters are done now. We just opened a page on Facebook called World Martial Arts Live. So if you go there, give us a few days, you're going to see videos, you're going to see a lot of action on that. So that said, I want to thank the Legacy Shorin Ryu team for accepting my invitation to be part of this, and more so to work 24 hours on a certain given day to help us to make it happen. And Sensei Suino has been in contact with Japan, they're in. And Okinawa, we're waiting for an answer. We're waiting for answers from the Shaolin monks in China. So, and of course, all the great guys. I won't say too much. I'll let Kiyoshi Randy tell you a little bit more at the end of the show. So I'll see you in about a week. I apologize for not being on this evening, but I'll send you an email late tonight or tomorrow. You'll know why. Friends, enjoy this. These are the four warriors, and you're in for a great surprise. Enjoy. Thank you.
Bye, Hunchy.
Bye, Hunchy.
Bye.
That's just awesome. That's just awesome. I mean, we know that's coming, but that's just awesome. So Sensei Dauphin, obviously you're going to log in for like an hour, do a workout, and then nap the rest of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm planning to not do much that day.
Yeah, you're planning on not doing much.
I'm going to binge Netflix for... Actually, I'm going to go back and watch all the Punch Kick Choke Chats while
Nice.
Well, that 24-hour event is on. No, you know, I'm obviously going to train for 24. Yeah. I'm going to try and train for 24 hours.
You and me both. I was wondering, before I get back to the housekeeping, we could maybe figure out something where we even do a little like sponsorship drive for a charity or something like that. Like every hour, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll set that up independently of the event itself. But what a goal. I mean, you know, you all know we've talked a lot about Sensei Suino's 12-hour crucible. And when you leave that, you just feel like a different human. And
I think the cool thing about it is, Sean, is, you know, when Sensei Suino and I trained with Nobetsu Sensei, we had to like spend thousands of dollars and get on a plane and fly to another country and do this. And some people will get access to different instructors that they would never have the chance to see move or teach or do things. And they're going to do it at a super, you know, you can pay thousands of dollars or you can pay, you know, an entry fee. And the entry fee is actually paying your dojo because that's the way we're setting it up is, you know.
Which is nuts. I mean, again, we're not trying to be too promo-y about it, but it's literally nuts how much martial arts you can get for how little when we
release. And you benefit pricing. Your dojo, right? That money is not going to, it's going to the dojos. So.
One thing I want to say before we jump to another thing is we really want your questions. The chat button, as always, is in the bottom. And chip in anything you like. What I was going to say right before Honchitarian came and gave us that great news is you're listening to Four Gentlemen Punching, Kicking, Choking. This is the chat part. If you don't like any of the content, if you don't like any of the swear words, then just log off. Watch it on YouTube. And on YouTube, what we're going to do is edit it. And every time we swear, there's going to be a little bunny that says, don't worry, you'll be okay. That's not going to happen. None of that's happening. You have to listen to what you have to listen to, or you can watch another channel. But we hope you stay with us. We hope you don't mind tough content because we're all tough people. Also, this is Don Warner from warnerentertainment.com, warrener.com. We're proud to be one of the sponsors of Punch, Kick, Choke Chat. We encourage you to visit our site at warnerentertainment.com and get your free copy of Warriors Magazine today. We have over 2,500 items, including books, DVDs, downloads, rare posters, and lots more, featuring some of the biggest names in the martial arts. Shotokan's Hirokazu Kanazawa, Goju Ryu's Chuck Merriman, Ninja Stephen Hayes, the legendary Joe Louis. That's just the beginning. That's warrener.com. Thanks for listening and keep smiling. Keep smiling, everybody.
We can do it.
Everybody keep smiling.
We can do it.
What's going on, gentlemen? What are we going to talk about tonight?
I want to, since we just did that commercial, Sean, about Don Warner, I just want to ask Sensei Legacy. He was actually, the first time you met Benny Allen, he was there, wasn't he?
Yes, it was in his dojo. Yeah.
It's interesting. He was there from the beginning of that.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was quite the guy to see for the first time. Somebody who was a green belt at the time. And he was quite handy. I got a little, I'll say, excited. He laid his hand on my chest and I ended up flat on the floor in my back. Just with a little, he just went like that. That was it. So he's quite a special person in martial arts.
I just want to clarify, Sensei, you were a green belt, not Benny Allen, right?
I was a green belt. Benny Allen was a black belt and track pants, running shoes, and a t-shirt. And when he punched, the sleeve snapped. yeah, I know you're laughing, but everyone else will back what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've talked to two or three people. So Sensei Pearson said that was like the most incredible hit he ever received was when you guys are, I think you're at a house party somewhere and Benny Allen was washing his hands and you said, Sensei Pearson here doesn't believe in soft striking. Could you show him? And he just went, yeah, sure, not a problem. Bang! He just hit him with a shot and he just like flew across the room.
Oh, yeah.
Han,
go ahead, Sean.
I got a question for you about that, Hanchi. So, you know, everybody who's come on and talked about Benny Allen talks about his power. You talk about his power. How much do you think in a martial artist it's that hip and loose hitting? And how much do you think it's like just kind of genetic torque structure that their body inherently comes with?
Well, you're talking about one being naturally moving that way,
yeah,
and doing learning to move that way.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got that firing from the hip, and you know all those, they're both the same. It's just that some, I think, probably chose the right parents and
right.
were maybe a little looser in certain places.
Mm-hmm.
But that punch is, everybody can do it if they're taught properly.
Right.
Everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody. You just need the teacher who can show it to them, I guess.
Yeah.
Would you say, Hanchi, on that too? You can't, it's one of those, I have found that you can't judge a book by the cover. So by that, I mean, you see some people who walk in and they look like they're like going to be a physically phenom. And then you see some like chubby little kid walk in and they can just do it. Like they can instantly go whack. Like you show them and they can do it and they can hit hard. So it's really not about a build. You got to be this tall. Your arms got to be this long. It's what you said. You got to be trained, and then you got to be able to execute it, and then you can do it.
Yeah. There's a lot of will involved there for some people.
I guess that's like most things, right? Like the work gets you up to 95%, 97%. And then the top 3%, yeah, that's like, okay, your muscle belly happens to let you be Flex Wheeler. And I'm not going to be Flex Wheeler, but I haven't put in the work to get to 95% yet either.
You're also not Flex Wheeler because you, I'm not going to say it. Never mind.
Well, it's like Wally Stokey. We can all sort of do what he does, but because he was born with this body, luckily, he can do almost anything with his legs. Incredible.
Yep. By the way, quick note that Tori put up there that I forgot to mention, she's running her show tonight, is that because it's our host chat, tonight you get spotlight. I think I might have said that, but that's one of my favorite parts of the night. So if you are chipping in with a question, let us know and we'll put you up on the show. And we get excited about that because of what we talk about in the sense of this being the living history. And then you get to be a part of that.
Yeah, and I made a post earlier, like, if you're on this call and you're a yellow belt and you got a question, it's okay. Ask the question. We'll turn the camera on. We want to talk to everybody. And also, obviously, like repeat guests, if you're a 10th Dan or an 8th Dan, we want to talk to you too. But don't shy away. If you're nervous about it, you should do it. That's what I would say. If you're nervous, ask a question and get the camera turned on. That's telling you you need to do it if you're nervous.
This is something I did as a white belt because I came to karate because I was always scared to fight in high school. I wanted to learn how to fight. And I made a rule for myself that every single time there was Ude Kakushin and Hanchi said, who wants to fight? That no matter how scared I was, I put my hand up. I've never, other than injury or shooting, not said. And I didn't always want to. I just knew that if I didn't, I'd never, ever want to. It would get scarier.
Who wasn't scared? Since Sensei, you were a little kid. Were you scared when you went to the dojo the first time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And some of my best students have been scared. One of our guys, Chad Catalino, who now trains on the west side of Michigan in judo, he's a great judo player. But he used to say his first year up at Itama in East Lansing, about, I don't remember what the percentage was, let's say a third of the time, he'd come to the door and he was too scared to come in. And he'd leave and then he'd come back, you know, and he said, okay. Whenever I made it in, I was always really happy. I did it, left judo class with a smile on my face, but now the guy's a killer, man. He's a great judo player. And yet, you know, he shares that story. It's almost become a good memory for him. Right.
Who were those two young kids in Japan, Alex? And who was the other one?
Dylan.
They were shitting their pants when they were standing at the edge of what building was that again?
That was the Kodokan.
So you're talking like two young guys who've flown from Canada to Japan, and they're standing on the edge of this, like, this tatami dojo like this, but the size of like four basketball courts with like 350 black belts that are all going to go out and do randori with each other. And they were shitting their pants. Like, you could see, I was like in the bleachers because Sensei Sweeno said, Randy, you probably shouldn't go down to this workout. So I was like, cool, I'll go up here. You could see their pant legs vibrating from like, but I'll bet you those guys, it's not the same now after they've overcome that fear. Like going there and doing that, everything's different now for them. I will bet.
Yeah, and that memory for them, right? I mean, whatever else they've got, they stepped on the floor in the Mecca, the world Mecca of judo, and got their asses handed to them, left with sweat and a smile on their face, and got a lot of compliments, you know? And that's what I said. I was so proud of all those guys that night and all of us. But that night, you know, those guys stepped up and did it, and none of them looked like they didn't belong there, right? They were on the apex of the judo stage, and they may not have been dominating, but they belonged in that place. They were in the right world. So, and they'll never lose that.
How about you, Hanchi? You weren't nervous the first time you went to the dojo, right?
Went where? I'm sorry.
I said you weren't nervous the first time you went to the dojo, right?
Oh, no. I wasn't nervous because I left.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But I did work up the nerve and went back. Yeah.
Any other moments, Hanchi, for you? You're a guy that everybody sees you now at this station in your life. And they see the bravery that you've exhibited, and they never hear about the stories of when you might have been nervous to do something or try something. Anything stand out? Maybe nothing. I don't know.
Not like that. No. I tend to, when I get nervous, I tend to try to get things over with quickly, like the tree. And sometimes it's not good. Sometimes it's good. You know. So it's just all experimenting, I guess.
I bet the three guys that you punched out wish that they knew that before you punched that one guy in the head. They probably wish they knew this guy likes to get things done quickly.
I don't know. I wonder, part of it's unknown, right? But I don't, all the time when I look back, when I've been really scared, whether it's the martial arts or other situations, it's almost always the uncertainty before the action. Once you're in action, right? You know, you're in motion, you make mistakes. You're like, oh, well, you know, fuck it. We'll see how it goes. But you're almost not scared anymore once you're in motion, you know?
No.
That's right. Yeah.
You think about fighting before you fight, and you think about fighting after you fight. You don't think about fighting while you're fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you're thinking about fighting when you're fighting, you're going to get your ass kicked. That's
right. And it will be over quickly.
Yeah. You need the brain.
We used to have this tower at summer camp. It was 15 foot high. And the rule was back in the 80s and 90s that if you climbed the ladder, you couldn't climb back down. Like that was the rule. And when kids were like seven, if they walked up and just ran off for the first time, they just did backflips within a week. But some kids would get up there, and if they stopped and paused and crept to the edge and thought about it, we could sit up there for 9 hours with a kid. And we just said, you can't go back down. Like, you're not going back down. The longer they stood, the longer they didn't want to jump. Finally, they'd jump and they'd be like, oh. And then they'd start doing the backflips a week later, just like everybody else. Now the kid gets to go back down the ladder, which I think sucks. And B, they never learn that they have to, I don't know, face the consequence of their choice, but also face the fear. Like after 9 hours, the fear is greater. And I love the idea that you spiral on your own fear that you then have to overcome.
I would have given them another option, Sean. I can lift you over my head and whip you off of this thing if you don't jump. And I'm going to start counting from 10 to 1.
I just had a question come in from Alden, and there's one up here. But I actually want to ask you guys, because something came up. I want to ask you, Senseis, what's the hardest you've ever been hit? Do you remember? And Sensei Suino, I'll include like getting whipped to the mat for you.
When I was around, I guess still a brown belt or something, I was fighting with John Pearson, and we fought quite frequently. And I just decided it was the right time to shift in and just nail him. Halfway through my shift in midair, he hit me with a front kick. I literally changed directions in the air and landed on my ass on the mat. You know, like on the tatami. That was probably the hardest I've ever been hit by somebody.
Sensei Suino?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I got, you know, growing up, I've just talked about this story. I mean, I grew up in a challenged neighborhood, and so I fought a lot, got punched in the head, kicked in the head a lot. I think the biggest impact that I ever had was actually one of the guys that played judo in Yokohama with us was the former Kanagawa Prefecture High School judo champion. And he didn't go on to be super famous, but the guy was just incredible. He was sprung. He was so fast. He was much bigger than I was. And I think the reason he didn't go anywhere is because he wasn't nice. And one day I was, you know, I'm at the dojo. It's hot as hell. It's July or whatever. Everybody's training. And I saw the guy and I just went, my God, that judo is amazing. I got to go train with him. And some of the older guys are like, hey, man, you don't have to do this. Like, that's probably a really bad idea. And I'm like, no, I just, you know, if I don't, I won't be able to live with myself if I don't go over and lay hands on this guy. And I don't know if you know what uchimata is, but it's a throw where you turn and you lift somebody, but you take your leg and you go up between their legs, not to hit them in the jimmy, but, you know, just to lift them up. But when he would do that, and I watched him do this to people, when he was finished, his face would be almost on the mat and his throwing foot would be almost on the ceiling. And, you know, sure enough, after about 30 seconds, he threw me with that. And I was just this, I mean, it's over instantly, but in that microsecond, it was so scary. And then, you know, just hit the mat, boom. And that one was, you know, and then there were 30 more of them, but that first one was the big boom that I still remember to this day.
Well, just so you know, we don't have a guest tonight, but hit him in the jimmy.
Hit him in the jimmy.
Hit him in the jimmy's going That's up right. on my wall. What about you, Sensei Dopat?
Well, it won't surprise anybody who's hit me the hardest. Well, but you know, Ben's like, obviously there's people on this call. You've hit me super hard before. Robert, who hosts, has hit me really hard. I mean, most of the black belts in Legacy Shorinru, if you fight them, they're going to hit you pretty hard. I remember the first time I went to what Sensei Legacy called the Forum, which is, you know, where the brown and black belts fight. And there's only three rules. No kata, no brutality, and no sniveling. So rule two and rule three kind of cancel each other out, right? You can be brutal if you want, and the other guy's not allowed to snivel.
Who's going to tell?
Right. So it's those people. I remember the first time I went to that, I was standing there in front of Scott Bowron, and I think I was like a third Q brown belt or something, and he kind of did his usual, we're just going to go easy, we're just going to take it easy, and bang, he's a lefty. He hit me in the head with a roundhouse kick, and like my eye instantly started to bleed, right? But that's, you know, nobody has hit me hard and stopped me as many times as Sensei Legacy. And that's not, obviously, when I was fighting with him with a brown belt, that wouldn't surprise people. But, you know, when I was a fourth and a fifth Dan, he still could regularly and easily hit me with a kick or a punch that would knock me on my ass or knock the wind out of me. I remember, I think, being a second or a third degree black belt and him and I having a really good fight and me being really stupid and just thinking, I'm going to fucking launch the hardest, fastest back fist to hit. Well, that was a really bad freaking idea because my ribs were broken about a millisecond after that, right? Not hard, but super controlled. I remember once him actually being nervous. He threw like a wheel kick at me and he felt the contact and he stepped down and looked at me and went, holy shit, Randy, are you okay? And I was like, fuck, Sensei, that was perfect. Like if I had moved a millimeter, my head would have come off my shoulders, but his foot just went like, tish, just like touched my jaw like perfectly. It was one of the most beautiful techniques I've ever experienced while I was fighting with somebody. So I'd have to, it won't surprise anybody. I have to say Sensei Legacy is the person who's hit me the hardest and the hardest the most times.
Yeah. Well, it won't surprise anybody watching that in a similar vein, I've been hit the hardest and the most by Sensei Dauphin. And, you know, I said this to Sensei on the weekend, like a lot of people, like you mentioned in Legacy Shorinru, have put hard hands on me. No one's touched me with their legs the way you have. I've got a sidekick that I can still feel from when I was a purple belt. And I've got a roundhouse that landed there. And you just looked at me and went, oh, and I was like, yeah, but it was fine, but it's the hardest I've ever been hit. But Sensei Suino, this won't surprise anybody either. When I was at summer camp, probably 14, there was a guy who was 18 years old and was an OFSA, which is like our state champ. He was a champ, and we were playing British Bulldog, and it was at a sandy field. And this guy and I were pretty tight. Maybe I was 15 or 16. Anyways, he grabbed me in a double under, just lifted me and drove me into the ground. I've never hit the ground harder than that, including when I almost got run over on my Harley and had to lay the bike down chip style and hit the pavement. This wrestler driving me into the ground, I thought my world was over. It wasn't. You're 15 or 16, you pop back up, but it was intense.
Do you know his name?
Steve Dunn.
We should all go see that guy.
Steve Dunn's a great guy. We should all go see him. I mean, yeah, but we'd all just end up hanging around, and whoever does the other stuff would do it with him, and you'd all enjoy Steve's company.
We'll send Sensei in first because he likes to get some stuff done fast.
Okay, so Alden Adair, and by the way, for people watching, Alden Adair is a black belt here in Toronto. He just got his knee, Dan. He's part of the reason why we have a Toronto club, because I do travel for work. Interestingly, he's not on the call tonight because he travels for work.
He is on the call.
Is Alden on right now?
Alden's on.
What?
Yeah, I see his face down there in a photo.
We need to turn that guy's camera on.
God damn, put the – Jesus.
Come on, Birmingham.
Alden.
Where is he?
Hey! There he is. Alden's been off shooting a TV show. Hey. Ollie just got back.
See, Alden, I'm looking out for you, man. I knew you were
on. Thank you. Thank you. I feel seen.
Alden's on the other side of the camera, and he's like, why don't I get to ask my question?
Sensei. Hey, Alden, what's the hardest you've ever been hit, Alden?
From you. It was the sidekick. It was your sidekick, the one you said you're a comfortable sidekick. I went to get drugs for it because I
were
had
they Quaaludes?
Not that bad.
Yeah.
But I was at work like hammering something with a sledgehammer, and I went, I can't do this anymore. I should go get some muscle relaxants.
Yeah. For everyone who's watching, my sidekick to drop Alden Days, they ended about 2 years ago. Alden learned how to tighten up on that. Alden, what's your question? I love this quote and this question for everybody.
Let me just bring it up here. It's from Dune, the novel Dune, and it kind of reminds me as well of Musashi's the path, the lonely path that he talks about. But the quote is, "We came from Caladan, a paradise world for our form of life. There existed no need on Caladan to build a physical paradise or a paradise of the mind. We could see the actuality all around us. And the price we paid was the price men have always paid for achieving a paradise in this life. We went soft. We lost our edge." And they're talking about a kind of a rainforest world, and now they're on a desert world. So I guess the question is, what paradises do we make today? And how do we change that? Or do we need to prevent from going soft and losing an edge? And are we going soft and losing an edge? So I guess I just want to know everyone's thoughts on that. In martial arts for yourselves, and then in the world society at large.
If I may, before anyone answers, Alden, that's not like you to be into like fantasy world shit. Like at all.
I was just going to say, where's your axe? Alden.
Some dice there.
Oh God! Oh, there is an overlap sometimes, isn't there, in our world? Monchi, are we losing an edge? Are we going soft? Does paradise cost us the sharpness that gets us paradise?
Are we talking about in the martial arts world? Yeah. I think it's the parenting because. Most of the parents take their, a lot of parents take their children and send them to us to raise them. And when they come to us, they don't seem to have that edge that they need, or that beginning to carry on another 50 years or over 30 years and to pass on that knowledge to someone else. So I'm finding that there is a problem because also as instructors, I hope I'm not offending anyone, but, you know, let's say we're going to use, Matsumura never used stripes on his belts, I don't believe, or anything like that, but by having to show those children, you're putting 20 or 30 stripes on their belts, you're taking away the strength of their mind to realize who they are. It's like, well, look at your belt, look who you are. That's, and in my thinking, that's weakening the person. You know, no belts is better than a whole bunch of different belts. So that you realize from the inside who you are, you don't need to wear a belt. So I have a difficulty with that, personally.
Sensei Suino?
Let me think on it a little bit more. Randy, if you're ready to answer.
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that question, Alden, because I do think that the world is a paradise. Everything has to be equal. Everything has to be neutral. Nobody can excel. You're playing games when you tell somebody, don't be good because you don't want to make this other person feel bad when they're trying to do the same thing as you. I don't subscribe to that. And I find in martial arts, it's not just in martial arts. I think maybe it doesn't exist as much in martial arts as it does outside. And when people from outside come into martial arts, they get shocked by the fact that, oh my God, I have to stand in here and this person's gonna, where's my paradise now? Well, guess what? That paradise was an illusion. It doesn't exist. Mm. That's the final arbitrator. When it comes down, push comes down to shove, somebody's gonna make you do something if they want it bad enough. Hopefully they're a good person and they use their stuff for good and not bad. But, you know, tonight we were talking about Itosu, and there's a famous story about Itosu's dad tying him to a tree and poking at him until at first he would cry and he wouldn't fight back. And his dad wouldn't let off on him when he was poking him. And then eventually that switch would go, right? And he'd go after his dad, and then his dad would stop as soon as he would flick the switch. Right? I don't know. I guess he's teaching him to live in the world that he lives in, not the one that he wants to live in. Right? We all want to live in this paradise, but the reality is it's something different. And interestingly, I think I was talking to you about this, Sensei, about, you know, the kids like Sydney and Jaden and Jaden Potter and Sammy, how they, life can make you hard. And you can learn to be hard and not to be hard. You can choose to be hard in a moment. And when you're young, sometimes you don't know how to be hard, right? Things don't bounce off of you the same way. So I do think people are getting softer. The expectations of people when they come in here now, it's harder to manage that than it was 20 years ago when people would come in. And I'd say, it's gonna take you about nine months to get your yellow belt. What? At the place down the street, I can get it in like 3 months and I'll have 4 stripes at the same time down there. But you won't be a yellow belt here. You could be a yellow belt down there, you just won't be a yellow belt here.
Yeah, Alden, I think about this two ways. Like, one is the idea of like, does the paradise soften? And it, to me, it 100% can. But it's that old saying, a man is only as faithful as his options. So when somebody comes from a tough background and has nothing to do but make their way to that local gym, that's, you know, we hear this from a lot of our masters. That's where they found their first sense of camaraderie. That's where they found. Now, give that same person $1 million and silk sheets. Is it as exciting at 6 a.m. to get up and do that thing? So that for me is, now you've got an option that's as appealing, if not way more, than sweating it out with the crew. But the other thing also then goes to the idea of destination versus journey. Like, when I was younger, it was always like, when I get this, then I'll be happy. When I get this, then I'll be a good fighter. When I get this, then I'll be whatever. Luckily for me, it switched to, there's no when I get this, there's just today. But if someone doesn't get to the today part, yeah, comforts could make them quit. Hey, I got a nice house and I got my black belt once. Cool. Are you a black belt today? You know, Hanshi always says, we reserve the right to remove your belt and your rank. And it's one of those things where I think a lot of people pause out when they hit a pretty good point in life, good for them. They're just not this. So I do think that is soft to me, but it's a choice, brother. Like, I have a good life. You know, I have a good life here in Toronto. It's a choice every day to train. It's not really, because it's a habit, but I have really good other options if I didn't want to do martial arts, but they're just not as good. They're good options though. We're only as faithful as our options. So success can soften us.
Yeah. I don't know about the world. I don't know about the, everybody on this, all four of you gentlemen have suffered in the dojo, and you're better people because of it. Right. And it's not that you seek suffering necessarily, but without the suffering, you don't get that. You don't get that reward. And so, you know, the world has come a long way, and the world's a more just place. It's safer. There are more options, more education. We treat each other better, at least in the so-called civilized part of the world. And that's a good thing. But as an individual, you can't give up. Man, I fucking wake up hungry, man. I leave my house in the morning hungry. That's not because I don't like my house. I can do better. It's like, and I'm not telling everybody they have to think like me, but everything I've gotten that's worthwhile in the world, I had to fucking work hard for it, man. The stuff I didn't have to work hard for doesn't mean as much. So I'm sort of being self-referential because I don't have an answer for the world, but you need suffering, man. And it's not suffering for suffering's sake. You need a mission. And if it's not a challenging mission, it's probably not worthwhile.
Yeah, we talk about the crucible census. You know, I remember after, I think it was the last one. And I think that for me was like an 8 pound or a 9 pound crucible. I remember weighing myself before and then weighing myself after. And I lost 9 pounds. And I don't know if you can tell from the camera, but I don't have 9 pounds to lose on most days. but I remember sitting there next to you as we were drinking a beer and you saying, did you hit your limit? And I worked out hard. Like, I threw myself into everything, but I was like, you know, sensei, no, like I could have done more. I could have gone longer. I could have done more stuff that day. Like, some people hit their limit, but I just didn't feel like I did. But that was hard. And the suffering was good. And that's why I look back on those things very fondly, those events. Because of the suffering, not the rewards.
Yeah.
And you know what that does? It kind of tells you where your capacity is, which is way beyond what you think, right? So that suffering, circling back to your question, Alden, it's like, if we live in a paradise and you're never forced to contend with that, then you don't know where your limits are, right? I don't know if I want to do what he does, but I love the stuff David Goggins says, right? We're all out here putting in 40%, right? Really? When I'm really exercising hard, when I'm running or something, and I hear myself going, God damn it, this is hard. My retort for the last couple of years has been, well, you got enough energy to think like that. Like, you're slacking. You're slacking, yes. Man, right? You don't find your capacity unless you have to fight at it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
What do you think, Alden?
Yeah, I think for myself, I can definitely fall into that paradise. I like beer. I like Montreal pastries. I just found out they're really good. Yeah. Right. I was on a diet this weekend. I ate a pound of smoked meat and Schwartz.
Well, you don't gain any weight from eating meat.
Right.
Only the vegetarians gain weight.
Yeah, it was a half loaf of bread. And then the Nutella that I got. So like, I like those things. That's a part of my life. That's like a creative outlet for me as well. Cooking and stuff like that. So I don't know if that's but it is a form of paradise. I mean, humanity wise, having food just like here is a bit of a paradise. And in what time period do we have all these things that are amazing? All the entertainment, all the food, all the calories, like, and then you kind of feel empty, even though you're full up. Like, I feel full up a lot of the time. So, but I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer, you know, to being a better actor or being a better martial artist. I don't know if I'm conflating two things there. So I think that a lot of the time for myself, I find myself in a bit of a paradise, didn't sleep in food and stuff like that, and feeling soft and feeling like the edge is off, and not being able to contend with other people, with myself, in debates or conversations, sometimes in working out, like, oh, this is too hard. So yeah, that's kind of me right now, where I'm at. So
I feel like paradise maybe is the struggle, though. Like, that should be the struggle for me. I know personally, like, I talked about the 21.1, that the CrossFit workout that they just released, and doing it, and halfway through that, it sucked. I was like, why am I doing this? Like, my shoulders are burning and my abs are killing me. But when I look back on that, I'm like, yeah, that's paradise. Like, that worked for me, and doing that and like making myself do it, fighting with Sense of Legacy, where you're afraid and you're like, you're getting beat up and there's a little bit of blood and lots of sweat in your eyes. That's paradise for me. I think the opposite, like, paradise isn't all the food and all the,
right.
That's the matrix. That's the trap.
Yeah.
Love that.
And I want to go back to the theme, the arc of these martial arts masters' lives that we keep talking about coming over and over again, is you got these lost, troubled kids stumbling into a martial arts school, starting to train, falling in love with it, suffering, but loving it, right? And then these guys come on our show, and 40, 50, 60 years later, they're people that contribute to the goodness of society. And guess what part of that is? Is they're creating a laboratory of structured suffering from people to help toughen them up so they can get on that arc too, right?
Well, I want to pick up on what you said, Sensei Dolphin, because I really love that. Like, I think hell is being confused that someone else's paradise is your own, and then wondering why there's no joy there. You know, like, Sensei Adair, like, when you're describing, like, if you work out, you kick ass, you do your thing, then you go make a big steak, eat a loaf of bread, have a great sleep, get up, rinse, and repeat. Who cares about the bread? That's you doing you. That's actually pretty sweet. But thinking, oh, I want silk sheets, let's say, but you don't give a shit about silk sheets. Now that's the paradise. And that for me can be the trap. Like, when I was in my 20s, I did and took in, I ingested all the stuff that being a successful TV actor offers. And that was my hell, was believing that on paper, paradise was my paradise. My paradise is what Sensei Dofan talked about, and other versions like that. Not the paradise on paper.
Right. You hear people talking about, I can't wait to retire. I can't wait to retire. I can't wait to retire. And then I ask them, well, what are you doing with that time? Like, what do you want to do? Well, I don't know. I just don't want to do this anymore. And then I'm like, well, fucking retire now then, and go start doing the thing that you want to do. Just stop doing this thing and go start doing the thing that you want to do. No. I like it when people say, I want to retire. Why? Because I want to become a triathlete, or I want to write a novel, or I want to paint a great picture, or I need more time to pursue my passions. That's okay for me. Yeah. But I want to retire because I want to put my feet on the coffee table and comfortably die. No, that's not good. And that's paradise.
Tori, if you could just keep Alden on the call, because I'm not sure if Sensei Copeland wants to chip in on this. I just want, if it's the same topic, and then if not, we'll boot you, Alden. But I know that Sensei Copeland, he had a question relevant to the current combo, but it might have been the one we had just before you, Alden. So stick around, and then let's bring Sensei Copeland in.
Oh, there's the guy.
Hey.
Good morning, gentlemen, ladies.
Hey, Sensei.
How are you guys? Good morning. You guys are getting to be my favorite crew.
Well, we're going to work hard. We're going to get hard. We're going to work hard to become the favorite crew, not getting to be the favorite.
Not one of.
Well, we don't want to start too high. We want to work our way up, right? Alden's question was really kind of heavy there. My question was regarding the first one. You guys were talking about getting punched hard.
Mm.
But his question was kind of deep. I'm like, I thought it was supposed to be a fun show or something.
So do you want to spin it? You want to spin his into something more fun?
Yeah, you just ask your question, Sensei, and we'll blank Alden's camera out so that he doesn't pay.
But I agree. I agree about, you know, where things are getting softer than they should. And paradise is personal to each person, I think, because we all have a different sense of what paradise is. Like, Randy likes to have his abs burn, and Alden likes meat.
Sandwiches.
Yeah. So yeah, he does.
My paradise is different from Sense of Legacy. So everybody's got a different paradise, but it's what is the purpose of that? What is it going to do for you at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. Your paradise, wherever you are, right? But my question was asking you, gentlemen, you've been punched hard. We've all been punched hard. But have you ever been knocked out? And do you remember by who? Knocked out. I mean, you can get knocked out from a judo throw, too.
Oh, yeah. I've been knocked out before, for sure.
we're going to kick you off the call, Alden, and then we'll go around the horn. And
see you, Alden. Good to see you, man.
Thank you.
Alden, great question.
Thanks for that, man. Nice to see you on the call.
Yeah. Thank you.
You want to start, Sensei Legacy?
About just betting knocked out, remembering who it was?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was John Lafitte at Toronto National Exhibition. I was fighting for first place. And it was, I was actually a brown belt at the beginning of the seminar, and Harold Warden called me up in the stands, changed my belt, send me into the black belt division. And I fought John Lafitte, and I'll be a little descriptive on it. I try to move in really fast. When I went in to move in really fast on him, he punched me so fast in the chin that my feet came out from underneath me and I landed flat on my back. When I landed on my back, I got right back up. I was too embarrassed. And then some stuff happened. I threw a wheel kick, and then I thought, okay, well, he's not going to catch me this time. Going in, and then I rushed in. Bang, he hit me on the chin. The last thing I saw was my feet out in front of me, and then I was on my back. And then I came to, and you just wonder how long you were down there.
Mm.
John Lafitte was, do you remember him, Sensei Copeland?
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, okay. He was like one of Benny Allen's students.
Yes.
Big, tough guy. Yeah. That's it. But I've been knocked out a lot of times, but that was like my real first time.
I think Harold Warren was notorious for doing that, making you go in at the different level belt.
Yeah.
No, he was, I remember Harold.
Yeah, me too.
Sensei Suino, what about you?
I've been choked out a lot, and that's sort of unremarkable. Because, you know, when you're a teenager in your early 20s in judo, it's sort of a point of pride. You want to get choked out a few times. But I've been knocked out, and I've been knocked out, interestingly, by somebody who's going to be a guest on this show in the future, and that's Gage Sensei, John Gage Sensei, in judo. We undertook one summer, I don't know if you know what uchikomi are. It's in judo where you do setups, right? Not throws. But we undertook to pick about three of our favorite throws, and over the course of a summer, we did 10,000 uchikomis. Every 10th one was a throw, and he was doing this Tayatoshi throw where you kind of drop down. And some Saturday afternoon in Tokyo at the Embassy Judo Club, we're throwing each other, and we're at whatever, you know, 5,642, and he threw me just right, and as I fell, my chin hit his knee, and you know, it just did that, you know, did that. And it was one of those, it wasn't a cold knockout. It wasn't like blackness and loss of time, but I wasn't really there. You know what I mean? And so every time I get choked out or knocked out, I get in a really good mood. I don't know why, but you know, you feel kind of warm and fuzzy. And I was sort of in the room, but not really in the room for, you know, about 2 or 3 minutes, and then snapped out of it. But that was kind of unique. It's the only time I've been knocked out in judo.
Sensei Novak?
Well, I want to say, when I was talking about getting hit hard, I do remember being in Sensei Legacy when I would leave Western and go back to Windsor. He would send me to Sensei Copeland's dojo to train there. And I do remember the first time that Sensei Copeland and I fought, I think I was a green belt, and we started to move. And I right away hit him with a reverse punch. And I remember his students going, oh, and obviously he was being very nice to me because I was a green belt. But then about a minute and 30 seconds, I didn't get knocked out, but he could have knocked me out with about 7,000 techniques that he hit me with over the next 3 minutes. But I do, so a funny story, I remember two times. One is when I was in grade five. That's not what Sensei Copeland, he was thinking in karate. But I remember I made a kite and we had to make these kites and we had to make them fly. And mine wouldn't fly because I had this big, big long tail on it. So I tied like a soup bone. I found this soup bone and I tied it onto the back of the kite. And I started to run and my friend was going, it's going up, it's going up. And at the last second I turned and the soup bone like hit me in the head and knocked me like flat in the middle of this field. And that was one of the ones where when I opened my eyes, there's like five people like looking down at me going, are you okay? And I had a big knot on my forehead. And but the other time, I just remember it. It's easy for me to always point it back to Sensei Legacy because I always fought with him so much. But and again, it's not like being knocked out, like you said, Sensei Suino, it's losing time. It's like we go in, bang, there's a shot. And I remember above the Moe's variety store, it's like all of a sudden I'm like, why am I standing in this part of the room and what just happened? Like, how did I get to here? Because, and I'm like, Sensei, what happened? He's like, well, I just hit you in the chin. Oh, okay. Like, am I okay? Yeah, you're okay. Keep fighting. Okay. Fighting.
I mentioned mine, Sensei Copeland. It was just Sensei Dofan roundhouse kicking me. Sensei, this was in the squash courts. And when he and I were the only people training together before he opened his formal club. And I just, it was just roundhouse. Didn't really see it coming. Everything closed. Like black. And then I didn't go all the way down. I went to my knee. And then as it came back out, there was just stars, like fucking bluebirds, like just shit. And I was just like, and he's like, yeah, right. I'm like, yeah. And then I got up and I don't know if we kept fighting or didn't, but it was, I don't know how long I took a knee for, but it was the only time in my fighting that it's ever just truly blacked and then opened up like a lens again.
I remember that. And you're not telling the whole story because I remember when we were fighting, I think you were a purple belt or a brown belt. And I remember saying to you, every time I would move in, you would duck your head down and look away from me. And I said, stop ducking your head down. And I think I was only an Eden. Like I was just I don't mean to be only, I was a secondary black belt at the time. And I remember you did it like, after I told you not to do it like three times, it was like, I was like, okay, if he does this again, he's going to get a lesson. And I started to move in and you did it again. And I just remember uncorking that. And I do remember that specifically.
Yeah.
How about you, Sensei Copeland? You've never been knocked out. You're too bad.
No.
You're too bad. You've never been knocked out. Listen,
I've lost two front teeth at the 98 championships in Florida. And then they were pushed back in by the coach and he said, get in and finish the fight. We're almost done. But, but I've been beaten up and knocked out. But the one time that I remember being knocked out was by Toki Hill. You guys maybe know who he is, but, great fighter.
Yeah.
And we were at a tournament and I got knocked out, but I mean, I worked the afternoon shift. Drove to Hamilton to the tournament and competed in the morning. And I remember, we're on guard. He says, begin. And I don't remember throwing any techniques, but I remember his leg started to move. And when I came to, I was in the washroom and they were putting cold compress on me or whatever. So it was, you didn't see what happened, but it came quick, but I went out. I mean, out. I don't remember going from the gym to the washroom, but I remember waking up in the washroom and I said, well, what happens is you got knocked out. That was the end of my tournament.
Done. That was the, there's somebody, a black belt from our dojo who would say, you got knocked the fuck out. That's what they would say.
Absolutely.
Sensei Copeland, I have a question. You said something I've had this thought and I'm curious to know what you think of it. I always tell people that I don't think it's the most powerful techniques that will knock you out or hurt you if you can see them. It's the ones you don't see coming, even if they're light or powerful, that hurt you the most, the ones that you don't see. And you just described, I saw a little movement and then I don't know what happened. I woke up later. What is your thought on that?
No, absolutely, for sure. I mean, your body, your body has a built-in self-defense mechanism. You see the technique coming, you're ready to, you know, either muscle contraction or whatever to defend yourself. But when you don't see it, a good flick in the right spot will put your lights out, absolutely. You know, so it doesn't have to be hard, it just has to be right. And if you don't see it, you can't defend against it. Absolutely, for sure. Toki Hill and I are really good friends, by the way.
What's going on in Windsor, Sensei?
Well, right now things are, how should we say, what was it, 9 o'clock, 9:30? Class is over. What's that?
9:43. Time is flying.
What the hell?
Yeah, it's flying. It's freaking, I looked up at 9:23 2 minutes ago.
And I had to hurry up and try to get on before it was all over. But things are going well. You know, clubs are doing well. Well, the club is doing well with reduced numbers. But we're doing what we have to do because my kids, they need me. And I can't just let them just sit around doing nothing. They have to work. And the work is fun, but it's hard. And if I cut up their food, I eat it.
I like that.
Those are the rules.
That's the one that's going on the wall. Sean has the one right now. Hit him in the jimmy.
Hit him in the jimmy.
And I
hit
have
him in the jimmy.
I'm going to be writing down, if I cut your food, I'm eating it. I like that.
If I cut up your food, I eat it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But can I just say one thing?
Yes, please.
Just a shout out. I was mentioning to Randy, a week or two ago when we chatted a little bit. I don't know what the right word is. You know, when you try to find out things about people, what's that word? What's that?
Creeping them on Insta?
Yeah, that's it. So I've been creeping Sean, I've been creeping Nick, I've always grabbed Sense of Legacy, but and Randy. But it was amazing because I was so, what's the word here? I was so impressed. That's not the word, it's impressed like an amateur word, but it was awesome to see all the different things that you guys are involved in. And then I'm thinking, this format that you have here, this is awesome coming from you guys. I was saying to Randy how many different things you guys are all involved in. And most of the people on the call probably are not aware that you guys are badass. I mean, like seriously, badasses. I think I sent a text to Sensei Sun. I'm like, where do you find time to write all these books? So I was creeping everybody. All your movie shots is amazing, man. I'm trying to find a way to collect them all, you know? Huh? And the scene, what is it, the scene? You're sitting on the stairs talking to a beautiful lady. What was that?
Yeah. That's the one that just aired on Lifetime. It's here in Canada on Saturday night.
Oh, that is awesome. Hello. Yeah. Listen, I come on this show, talk to you guys, and then I go find out stuff about you.
I love it.
That's awesome.
So be careful.
Well, it must be good because you keep coming back on the show, Sensei.
Yeah.
And by the way, like, you're the baddest of the badasses, but
not even close. Not even close.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Sensei. We really appreciate you popping by and saying all that and being.
Thank you so much for keeping up, for doing what you guys do. Keep up the good work, man. Absolutely.
Love you, Sensei.
All right, take care, guys.
Thank you so much.
Hey, brother.
So we got a real fun question here from Paul Dupree. I hope I'm saying that right. Paul Dupree, if it's French, doesn't want to come on, which we totally respect. How many of you have actually had a street fight as an adult? And were you able to apply any of your martial arts experience in having that fight? Hanchi.
Hey-o. Do you want me to tell the story, Hanchi?
Not taking the bait.
Well, I've been in fights, martial arts. If you train right, martial arts will save you. If you train right, you've got to have the right teacher. If you're taking martial arts and you're past a green belt, say you had a brown belt and up, and you get into a street fight, if you don't do good, or if you don't, you can't defend yourself. You're in the wrong place. Martial arts works. It's 8,000 years old. Why do you think they're still doing it? Because it works. Okay, if you go to a school and things aren't right, it's because I would have to guess that they're not taking a classical stance on martial arts. Yeah. You got a lot of guys that are good sport fighters, you know, but those are guys with natural talent. Those are not the guys who need to go and get it.
Thanks, Hanchi. Sensei Suino?
That was such a profound answer. I sort of feel like the subject just got wrapped up. I have I got in a lot of fights until I was about 23. And I think I lost as many as I won. And I haven't been in a street fight since then. I did save my life with a forward roll in New York City once. I tripped on the street and the cars were bearing down on me, and I did a forward roll onto the sidewalk and it hurt a little bit, but I didn't get run over.
Yeah. Well,
I guess that's a success story.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've had a physical fight outside the dojo. Long, long, long time.
Sensei Dauphin, applying your experience in an adult street fight?
Yeah. I just want to be careful what I say, because I don't want people to then be like, well, I'm going to test that guy. Right. I don't want people testing me. I suggest you don't test Sensei Legacy or Sensei Suino or you, Sean.
Right.
You might be surprised if you test one of these people. If you're thinking, they're just talking smoke. Well, you're going to find out if you try. I've seen Sensei Legacy in a lot. I've been with him in a lot of different situations. For me personally, I've been in high school. I always say to my kids, I couldn't go to high school now because I would have just been kicked out permanently for all the fights that I got in. But you know, when you say fight, that also brings things into people's minds. They apply things. And a fight for one person could be a little scuffle where you're pushing and shoving. And a fight for another person is like a life and death match, right? And I don't know how many life and death matches I've ever been in. I've had people test me and they have failed. Like the first time, I remember having to go to Sensei Legacy because he has rules. If you get in a fight outside of the dojo, you got to come to him. And I remember going to him. I was working in a factory at the time, and say, I think I was a second degree black belt or first degree black belt. And I said, Sensei, I got in a altercation. And he said, well, what happened? And something happened inside the factory. And then when I came out at my lunch break, this person was waiting for me. My karate served me very well. And in retrospect, it served me well because I controlled the time and space in a way that allowed me to deliver my karate, right? And I think in the end, if you're being trained well physically, you also need to be trained to think about the situations that you might find yourself in and how you would react to those. Again, I'm a student on this call, so Sensei Legacy often, I remember when I was a yellow belt, green belt, him saying, you should think about situations that you might find yourself in and how you will handle them, because if you think about them, then you'll be better prepared to handle them when they come up. If you've never thought about them or if you never contemplated them, you'll be behind, right? And I really feel strongly that when you train for a long time, when you're not a quitter and you get past 30 years, that training, what does it give you? If you don't control the time and space, it allows you, I guess, basically to overcome your own mistakes. You when you're like a higher ranking black belt, and this is the moment you should have finished everything, and you have a high skill level and high training, you can move past that moment and make mistakes and still maybe overcome, but you shouldn't. You get past that moment, you're exponentially increasing the odds that you're going to fail in that situation.
Thanks, Sensei. Paul, I'm going to tell a sort of roundabout quick story about that. I haven't even, there's no secret here, but I don't think I've shared the story with the senseis. But so there was a guy who used to run a bar that I used to be a regular at in LA, and he was an ex-Marine, and he and I had sparred in the daytime for fun, and it went really well for me. The sparring went my way often, always. And he was really respectful and we got along great. And then one night, and as many people on the call know, I used to do too many drugs. And I was just lit off my ass. And a couple guys were trying to kick this sign. And I was like, oh, can I have a go? And they're like, as if. And I just threw a sidekick and cracked the sign they were trying to break. And then the one guy comes up and puts his hand on my face and goes, oh, yeah. And I go, don't touch me. And he goes, what are you going to do? So I back up and I could feel my heart pounding in a way that if I elevated my heart rate because of all the cocaine I'd done, I might have a heart attack. No word of a lie. And I just went, don't touch me. And I walked into the bar. I walked into the bar because there's no way it would have been a good idea to fight that guy. So that's the end of that night. And my buddy Adam goes, what happened? I said, oh, this guy's just trying to put hands on me and I'm just kind of lit up right now and I can't deal with it. 2 weeks later, I feel a tap on my shoulder and it's the dude. And he goes, I've been looking for you. And now this night I feel great. And I stand up and I'm ready to go. And he goes, I'm buying you beer all night, brother. And I was like, what's going on? He goes, Adam fucking told me who you were. Thank you for walking away. I didn't realize you were a stone cold fighter. And I went, and I just kind of went, I'll take the beer. So by fighting Adam in a really healthy, fun context, and by avoiding the fight that my body wasn't in condition, which I don't recommend to anybody to deal with, I ended up getting free beer all night and winning the fight through martial arts over here. I have a lot of stories like that. I don't have any of these head to head because I just avoided them. Even if I win, I lose, I think. Up until around age 35, I wish I'd street fought more. And when I hit 35, I was just like, I'm really glad I didn't. And I also know what I can do now because I trust it. So I hope that's helpful.
I like what the champ Daryl Hennigan said. It stuck with me through many things. When you see a guy like Jean-Yves Theriault or Leo or Sense of Legacy or Daryl Hennigan, when they walk in the room, there's something different about them. Mm. That person probably could feel that, Sean, too. There's something different about you.
Yep.
I liked when Daryl Hennigan said, I treat everybody the way that I want to be treated. And I demand that they treat me that way.
Yep. Yep. Also just clocking stuff. I was at Tim Hortons the other day. Couldn't see behind me. I just was like, something's fucking weird behind me. And then I look in the reflection of the glass and there's a dude back there without a mask and he's touching and poking everything in sight. And I just turn and I look at him because I don't want him on my six. And he goes like this. And I go, and he goes and turns and walks the other way. And he then went and started causing shit over here, trying to get something from the Tim Hortons guy. And it was one of those things where it was like, just feeling that there's a weird thing behind me and I'm not going to have him on my back. And then when he tried to be, it was like, no. And he just went, no. And that for me was a good resolution. He went and left. And that was that.
Good question.
Good question. Really good question. By the way, to Don Warner, I owe an apology because we're doing two of you tonight and it's all on me. I missed the timing of this. So I just want to say right now, this is Don Warner from WARRENERentertainment.com. We're proud to be one of the sponsors of Punch Kick Choke Chat. We encourage you to visit our website at warnerentertainment.com and get your free copy of Warriors Magazine today. We have over 2,500 items, including books, DVDs, downloads, rare posters, lots more, featuring some of the biggest names in the martial arts, Shotokan's Hidekazu Kanazawa, Goju Ryu's Chuck Merriman, legendary Joe Lewis, Ninja Stephen Hayes, and that's just the beginning. That's warnerentertainment.com, WARRENER. entertainment.com. Thanks for listening. Keep smiling. And my apologies for missing our obligation. It does happen and that's on me.
I don't think it's a big deal, Sean.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Don's going to be fine. If he decides that he wants to not run our ad, we'll still do the ads for the remainder of the time, just one short. Or you could always make it up in the future randomly. 2 years from now, we could just do a Don Warner ad non-solicited to thank him for everything. So I don't think this is a big tragedy.
Yeah, or in 2 weeks I could just do 4 or 5 during the show.
Right. I no, probably not, but
insanely, we're at 9:57. Where do we want to go with this? Do we want to take it out with each of us talking about something? Do you guys have a last question you want to break open? I mean, I got nowhere to be, but we're at 10.
Like to, if you wouldn't mind, I'd sort of like to, if there's anybody who is not a longtime martial artist, or if a new martial artist is here, some of the major things that people look at. And I thought I would ask this to Nick. And now it's a two-part question. One is, does a person really have to go to Japan or the Orient to become a good martial artist? Right?
Uh-huh. You want me to answer that part or wait?
Yeah, sure. You go ahead and do that.
No. Simple answer. You can become a great martial artist without ever going to Japan. But there's some great, I mean, you know, we were just saying, Hanchi, you know, martial arts has been around for 8,000 years. And the Japanese have an unbroken, right? Their culture has had an obsession with it for most of that time. And so there's some really great martial artists, some great cultures over there. I think there's a flavor to it and a commitment level that's hard to find anywhere else. But there are people on this call that are living examples of great martial artists who didn't spend extensive periods of time training there. So I think the answer is no, but with some, you know.
I understand you. It's good. It's just because, like hockey, you know, look at the Russians and the Americans. Well, we actually started in North America. Yeah. The other question was going to be, because you have so many different talents, and this is not for us, but more for people that are watching. And that would be, is it better to train in one martial art, or is martial art so hard that it takes one entire lifetime, like they did back in the day, to be a good martial artist? Or can you be a good martial arts at different arts, but will you still have the same quality?
Man, that's a tough question. And I think you probably agree, it probably depends on the individual, right? I think you have a better chance of being really great at a martial art if that's the one you do and you commit to it completely. I almost think my obsession, my the fact that I do so much, it's not a gift, it's a challenge to overcome. I just have a really scattered attention span. But no, I mean, don't. I that's why I like the UFC. There's some great martial artists in the UFC, right? And it's proved that you can become great as a fighter. And also, some of those guys are great in their individual arts by any measure, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's so many fewer limits. Even when you and I were much younger, all we had was TV with rabbit ears and a phone with a cord on it, right?
Yeah.
Now the world's at our disposal. And I think people's brains are wired differently. They can internalize a lot more as long as they put in the hard work. And that's the ultimate decision maker, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I just wanted to, for you to say it, because you hold several high ranking titles, and yeah.
Well, can I throw that back on Hanchi and you, Sensei? Like, I know my own answer with doing the grappling I do, but you two both do two martial arts and are, you know, black belt or above, including full masters of one. Like, do you find the Iaido helps your karate, or you'd be better if you spent that time just doing more karate?
Who do you want to go to first?
Let's start with you, Sensei, and then we'll go back to Hanchi just because he sort of brought the question to us.
Well, it's interesting because the first thought that came to mind when Sensei Legacy asked that question is just a couple of days ago, I watched an interview on YouTube with Yahagi Sensei. And Yahagi Sensei, who's a very famous Iaido practitioner that Sensei Suino knows well, Yamaguchi knew his instructor very well. Like, there's a long standing, and he's a very thoughtful person, and he took a long time to answer the question because he wanted to be polite. But he said in this interview, you know, martial arts in Japan today is not quite as popular as other things in Japan. It's more popular in the United States and in Canada and in other places. And I'm happy for that I get to go teach in those places and I get to move my art forward. he said, of course, it would be good if in Japan more people were interested in it, but it's most important that people are interested in it somewhere. So I definitely don't think you need to go to Japan to be, but I think if you're going to pursue multiple arts, I think they should complement each other. By that, I would say, you know, they have similar characteristics or similar, like if you go into an Iaido dojo or a karate dojo, the learning environment is very similar. You line up, you follow the certain techniques. They're probably more the same, or I don't want to say more the same, but there's a lot of similarities in them, which kind of make it a little bit easier to pursue. I think if you are going to try and do something that's totally out of the realm, then you, my opinion is you might be limiting yourself to your ability. And I'm speaking this from my own perspective, right? That for myself, if I was going to all of a sudden go and try and become, you know, a fourth Dan in BJJ, or the learning environment is different, right? You know, Sean, you go there, they clap hands, they start to roll, maybe they drill, they do some things. It's not quite the same as it is in a classical karate dojo. So I guess I would say if you want to delve into multiple arts, you should try and keep something similar about them, like the learning environment or the way it's structured. The way the teachers teach is another good.
Right.
Like most of the Japanese martial arts would have an instructor. You know, if a judo sensei is Sensei Suino and a karate sensei like Sensei Legacy, they'll find more similarities in the way that they teach and their philosophies. If you go to a Muay Thai gym, they might just take you over and say, just kick this post and don't ask any questions.
I kind of just want to add to that really quickly, because I really think that's right, you know. And I mean, I started my grappling in the late stages of my fourth degree black belt in karate. And the environment can be so laid back, you know, you don't have to call your teacher anything. You can choose not to roll if you want, just sit against the wall, sweat, whatever. And I think that could be a real deterrent to someone who's trying to learn a classical art, because they go, well, I actually, because it's easier, right? It's easier to just go, I'm not going to roll this one. I'm going to sit this one out too. You don't have a teacher going, you can't sit that out, get up, fucking move or leave. And I think that would be, somebody might go, I'm going to do this instead, but they'd miss the gold of a classical martial art. So I love the idea what you said, Sensei, of like, find something that doesn't, not only complements, but doesn't directly conflict and give you a sort of, I'm not saying jiu-jitsu is easier or not. That's not the point I'm making. The learning environment can be easier because you can self-guide. And that's one of my favorite things about martial arts, is that I don't self-guide. I do what you tell me. What do you think, Sensei Legacy, about the Iaido, and does that help your karate? And because you do two arts, like, how do you answer your own question with that?
Well, I would say personally, EI brings my mind in a different direction. And that's why I like it, because it is completely different. And I need to open up some new ground in there. Whereas I believe that the other part, the other physical, mental part, is being well taken care of by karate. I just needed something, I think, to make me just a little bit more refined. And a bit of a, for lack of better words, a warrior or a gentleman's art, you know, something to make your mind work in a different direction. So that's the way I looked at it. That's why I did EI.
I like the history of EI too. When you grab that sword and you wrap your hands around that sword, you wrap your hands around a history that goes back thousands of years. And one of the things I often say is, and I'm not comparing, this is just a statement. There were times in history where when I hold my sword and I train, I think, my God, there was a time in history where 6,000 people stood on one side of a field with this sword in their hand, and 5,000 people stood on one side, another side of a field, and then they converged on each other with swords. That's crazy when you think about that. That didn't happen in other martial arts. Like, there was never like 10,000 Muay Thai guys against this many thousand, and they came down and fought each other with this. Iaido is one of those arts that stands singularly in my mind when I think of warfare, because the katana is like, you know, the AR-15 of its time, right?
Sensei Suido, do you like Last Samurai?
Oh, I love that movie.
Have we talked about this ever? We haven't talked about this ever.
I don't know if we have. I love that movie. This is almost brings us back to Alden's question in a way, and something we've talked about before about the idea of Zen. Like, talk about making people grapple with the essence of existence, right? You're a warlord or a leader, and you take your 6,000 guys and you say, okay, we've been training techniques with swords for 3 years. It's been very abstract. You've got sharp swords on your hip now. And in 20 minutes, we're going down that hill to face those other 6,000 guys. You know, if you made your life doing that, you know, you are really getting to the bottom of your own existence. Like, that's deep shit. Right, it's violent, but that's the way you get to the essence of who you are, right? No bullshit. This is it for me, right? That's why they always say, right, the samurai, the warrior chooses death, meaning, yeah, this is my path. I'm going forward, and you know, they Shinken Shobu, right, is the term, right? A fight with real swords, and often I liken karate fighting, which you guys do much more of than I do. That's the same attitude, right? You can't dabble in it. You got to throw that punch with real intentions.
Well, sure, get through to the gray areas.
Yeah, right. But you can't be thinking about the gray areas if someone's standing in front of you with a sword, right?
That's right. Yeah, there are no gray
areas. Right.
Right.
And I actually do like PC culture more than probably most on this call. You know, that's where I go with politics and that. But there's no time for PC. Like, nobody has time to get offended when you're staring down a fucking sword. Like, get offended all you want. That's your life. And that's one thing my brother and I were once talking about. Like, we can be offended by really small things these days because all our base needs are taken care of. And it's a bit of, again, what Alden was talking about. We're not fighting for survival. I can walk 20 feet and get chocolate bars right now because of the corner store, because I live in an urban center. Or I can decide to get soy milk. Like, so then it's a great, everything, it's Maslow's hierarchy. Okay, that's taken care of. Okay, what annoys me slightly? And that's the exact opposite of what you're describing, Sensei. What annoys me slightly? The guy trying to hew me in two.
That would be annoying.
Hanshi Legacy, you said in the intros that you're the quiet guy, but next time you're just coming with questions, because that was fucking great.
Great questions.
You know, all the questions tonight we appreciate, but I want to stay another hour cracking open what you just brought up.
Luckily, we'll get to do that in a couple weeks.
We'll do it in a couple weeks.
Thank
you. Yeah. Anybody want to go out on anything?
Well, we need to go out. We definitely need to talk about what's coming up in the next.
Okay, great. So let me throw that to you for now.
Okay. Well, and then I'm just looking at, I noticed that our good friend Kiyoshi Adet Rice has joined in the call. Really super miss that lady, really good friend of mine and ours, and has a really good martial arts dojo. And I think she's the only one that we didn't give a shout out to in the beginning. But the next couple of weeks is gonna be a little bit of a different format.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna take next week off. Next week will suck. We'll all take a week off, and on Thursday night, we'll wander around and say,
text each other.
Yeah, we'll text each other and say, why did we decide to take a week off again? Like, why do we do this to ourselves? But then after that, we're going to have Sensei John Gage on. And after that, we're going to have Hanshi Alan Sai on. And these two guys, and it's a little bit of a different format. They have both requested an earlier time. So we're going to be doing it at 5 o'clock our time because of personal commitments and also time zones, right? People have to understand that Hanshi Sai actually said, no, do it at your regular time. And I said, Hanchi, that's 2 o'clock in the morning your time. Like, we don't really want you to have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. So he said, okay, well, do it at 5 o'clock your time then. And that's still almost midnight for him. So we want to accommodate these things. With Sensei Gage, it's one of those things where I look at the people on the call and I think about Sensei Gage and I think, you're around this guy and you just take for granted how good he actually is and, you know, what he can do. Same with Hanchi Sayi. You might not know this guy, but man, he's good. These guys are good. And if you're in our position where you have leadership like Sensei Suino and Sensei Legacy, you just take this as your normal world where some people, they could never dream of having access to a person like Sensei Gage. Right. And anyway, so that's my big plug. I really hope people log in because you will not be disappointed.
Yeah.
If you talk to these two people and you listen to what they have to say about martial arts. And then the last week, the third show is going to be, we're probably going to have a bunch of the instructors from the 24-hour, you know, the marathon training event. We're going to have some of the instructors come on and just kind of promote that and talk about what they'll be teaching to kind of give people a flavor of what's going to happen.
So amazing.
Yeah. And then one last thing I want to say is, Sensei Legacy and Sensei Suino, you'll like that when you get to St. Thomas and you finally can get there, Sensei Legacy has, as we've done here, he's put a bunch of tatamis down in the home dojo in St. Thomas, and he's on the hunt for maybe like 5 or 10 more tatamis. So if anybody on this call knows where we can grab 5 or 10 more, that would be great. 10 would be best.
Awesome.
Red.
So one thing I want to say is thanks. Tonight it was Tori running this for us. And in general, there's the people who make Punch, Kick, Choke Chat happen. Show does not exist without you. Robert Shlumsky, Mike Russell, Victoria Pfeff, Justin Shea, Alden Adair, Andre Sedeshev. Just amazing. Just amazing. You know, when you see those Instagram posts, when you see those Facebook posts, when you see they're helping create that. They're helping create the world. So it's they're on our shoulders and we're on theirs.
I wonder if Sensei Legacy or Sensei Suino have anything last they want to say before we shut this down.
I want to meet again in about a month and do it again.
Love the host chat. Thanks everybody for watching. It really makes our night. And gentlemen, such a pleasure and such an honor to be a part of this with you.
Great to see you as Thank always. You
night, everybody.
Have an awesome night, everybody.
Be safe.
Thanks everybody for joining in.